Greet you in Jesus' name again this morning. It is good to be back at Elm Street. I missed the last two Sundays very much, somewhat involuntarily, especially last Sunday. But the Lord stretched me out of my comfort zone both Sundays a bit. At Hidden River, I was preaching there, and they warned me just a little bit beforehand. They bought a bowling alley and are converting it to a church, and the news said they are stopping in. And so they warned me of that. They said, don't change your message. Just go ahead and preach whatever the Lord lays on your heart. And after a while, there was a gentleman in the back with a lanyard and a badge and a camera, and I tried to keep preaching. And I got quoted in the news, so that was a new experience for me. But one thing that happened in the news article, one thing that happened is I noted that he kept commenting on the young church with young people and the energy that is there, the optimism that is there. And I'm sure that stands quite in contrast to what may be typical, as he thinks, of church life. And then last Sunday, I filled in as the evangelist to close some meetings that I didn't start. That was another unique experience. And now here I am this morning, trying to collect my thoughts together for a message. And I guess I have another unique experience tonight. So hopefully the Lord is soon done with the unique experiences, get back to normal. I titled my message this morning, Am I Gathering or Scattering? Am I Gathering or Scattering? And the catalyst of the message that the Lord laid on my heart starts with a person who could not talk. I invite you to turn to Luke chapter 11. He wasn't a dog that was deaf. He was a person that was dumb. He couldn't, because there was a demon inside of him, it restricted his ability to communicate. Not that he didn't have nothing to say. He had things to say, but he couldn't. And of course, Jesus helped him to liberty and confronted the demon inside of him. And suddenly, Jesus had everyone's attention all around him, and there was question marks and discussion that ensued. And this is recorded for our benefit yet today. And we see here this was the kind of demonic oppression that is pretty powerful. For someone to be under the power of demons to the point that they can't talk is very oppressed. It's quite oppressed. And I think that's part of what had the attention. I mean, there are people that have demonic activity in their life, but unless you are with them at the right moment, you would hardly detect. They're living fairly normal lives, even though they are subject to demonic activity in one particular area or two. But this was obvious. This was a 24/7, very heavy demonic oppression on this individual. And it says that the people wondered. They wondered after Jesus was able to overcome this demon that was so obviously there. And that wonder refers to amazement at Jesus and the miraculous power that he had and the authority that he had. And I like to just read here in Luke 11, verses 14 to 23. Let's read the conversation here, the happening in the conversation. In verse 14, Luke 11, and he was casting out a devil, and it was dumb. And it came to pass, when the devil was gone out, the dumb spoke, and the people wondered. But some of them said, he cast out devils through Beelzebub, the chief of devils. And others, tempting him, sought of him a sign from heaven. But he, knowing their thoughts, said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. And a house divided against a house falls. Because ye say that I cast out... I'm sorry, I'm reading off my notes here and I'm missing a part of it. Verse 19, and if I by Beelzebub cast out the devils, By whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore shall they be your judges. But if I with the finger of God cast out devils, no doubt the kingdom of God is come unto you. When a strong man armed keeps his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come on him and overcome him, he takes from him all his armor wherein he trusted and divides his spoils. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me scatters. And verse 23 is where I would like to focus this morning. I would like it to be a positive message. But Jesus says, we're either gathering with Jesus or we're scattering. And that was a sobering thought as I pondered that. How would I be scattering instead of gathering for Jesus here at Elm Street? So you see, there was wondering that led them to a consensus here. They had just witnessed what was an obvious miracle, and there was a hypothesis in their mind of what happened, that obviously Jesus was connected with the spirit world in some way, that he could just demand that this higher level demon just come and tackle the demon that made this man or lady dumb. Apparently that's what happened. He just knew how to manipulate Satan's kingdom and get it the bigger guns out, and finally there was a scuffle and the one demon lost his perch and this person could talk again. And this was probably a bit entertaining to them. At least it seemed like, wow, Jesus, what else can you do? Let's see a sign from heaven. Let's keep this going. Obviously, you got connections. They were ready for a sign that they couldn't argue with, that there was no doubt that Jesus had connections. But verse 17 says that he knowing their thoughts. Now, wouldn't it be nice if when we're relating to people that we could always just read their thoughts and know exactly how to direct the conversation? Well, that was one power that Jesus had. And Jesus, knowing their thoughts, decided to give them a word picture or a mini parable, if you will, that to help them to understand what had transpired and that their hypothesis was way off course. And Jesus basically, in my own words, he said, this isn't really complicated. It's like this. The spirit world has distinct forces, and they're at complete opposite ends. There is the forces of Satan, and there's the forces of the kingdom of light, my kingdom. And they both work with a united effort internally. They won't be kicking each other out internally if they're going to be victorious. That's not the way it works. If the people in a house or a kingdom don't have each other's back and are pulling for different goals and different objectives, eventually there's going to be a fallout. They won't be the strong men of the house. They won't be the overtakers and the overcomers. You can't do things to drive wedges and still be united in a kingdom offense. It won't work. The wedges will tension the fabric and of the unit to the point that it tears at the seam somewhere. It starts coming apart. And it will succumb to the pressure of dysfunction. It will fly apart. The ability for a house or a kingdom to stand is in its cohesion as a unit. And basically Jesus was saying, how naive to think that Satan's kingdom would dethrone itself. That's not what you saw. That is not what happened here. That would never work. It would be like an army tank with the man at the top and the man at the bottom loading the ammo, not working in harmony, and it would be a very vulnerable situation if that would be happening in Satan's kingdom. Well, we see the results of fallen institutions all around us, fallen churches, fallen houses, fallen marriages, where people are headed to the divorce courts, fallen homes where there's a difference of vision between parent and child and the tensions are very strong, fallen houses where there's an inability to reach a common goal in some area between a husband and a wife. And when those things start happening, the institution just can't stand indefinitely. We see that happening. And then he gives the key. If we want to maintain cohesion, if we want to be victorious, if we want to stay intact, if we want to stay strong, I'd like to reread verses 21 to 23 again. He says, "When a strong man armed keeps his palace, his goods are at peace, are in peace. His goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come on him and overcome him, he takes from him all his armor wherein he trusted and divides his spoil." The goods are no longer at peace. They're being divided. They're now spoil. And verse 23 says, "He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me scatters." The objective of kingdom forces is not to fight for the sake of fighting, but it's to get or maintain something that is valued very dearly. And unless the objectives are reached, it's hard for those forces to lay down the fight because they're protecting something that they value. And we see this happening before our eyes. This is why Ukraine and Russia are in conflict. The one is fighting to get back land that used to be in their jurisdiction, and the other is fighting to keep the land that was carved out and the independence that they are now enjoying, and they do not want to go back to communism. You see, there's something valued that they are tenaciously working together to hold on to. Tenaciously, to the point of their life. And Jesus, I think, is what he was trying to say here in this passage to those that were wondering, is either we're going to be working together tenaciously to hold on to something that we value, or else we're going to not care and let it fray at the fabrics and let it slip through our fingers, and we'll actually be a part of helping it disintegrate because of our lethargy, because of our standing sideways to what is of value, protecting what is of value to us. In the conflict of the church and the world, we have a dual mission of sorts, where as a church, we are called out to defend the unique culture of the church, as it were. We're a separated people. We talked about that this morning. We are now continuing being a separated people unto God into the New Testament, but we're also trying to be relevant enough to be attainable and be reachable to the seekers. And this involves quite a journey. It's quite a lot of work. It's quite a lot of defining where we're going and how we want to get there. We're to be that sanctuary city for the battle-worn worldling. But we're also to be protecting ourselves from the things of this world. It's a tall calling. God created his church to be a nucleus of believers working as a unit to not only maintain what we were gifted, but to add to the gift, to expand the kingdom of heaven, to make it bigger, to get more souls while we still have opportunity. And this dual mission makes the kingdom of heaven work a delicate balancing act. We can have the maintainers be in conflict with the visionaries. And as we endeavor to find our way through current stresses, we can actually end up being a separator if we're not careful. instead of a uniter. This dual mission is a delicate balancing act. But there is a bottom line. If we're going to be successful as a church, we can fall maybe into the rut of a glib abandon of tradition and a view that the church culture is pointless and we need to be doing more to be inclusive and reaching out. Or we can be so engaged in the reaching outside that we become careless or reckless in that. But the bottom line is that for an armed man to keep his palace and stay in the fight to keep his goods at peace, he does not want his goods to become spoil, to be the enemy's reward at the end of the day. And we're either working as a unit to defend what God has graciously handed to us, even though it may be costing us dearly at times. We know we're blessed and we know we've got something good, and Brother Steve Long's talk on Wednesday evening just was burning in my heart and inspired me to continue on with these thoughts on this message. Either we're working hard to defend what we have, or we're a part of the dismantlers and the people that are weakening what we have and standing in sideways a bit to what we have and grumbling about what we have. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me scatters. Are we gathering or are we scattering this morning? How do we value what God has given us here at Elm Street? The spiritual unit that God has put here that is to be a part of the work of the kingdom, and we're just this little nucleus here of the greater worldwide work of the kingdom. But we can either be a gatherer or a scatterer right here. And we could be working toward keeping this a nucleus that's in harmony and working together. And there is awe to the news reporters that come and they're amazed. Well, we can be dismantling and we can be scattering and we can be planting seeds of what all is wrong in our church life. And after a while, the younger people get a bit disgruntled because of what they're hearing and what they're seeing. And this can happen on a very personal level. The home, it can happen in the home. Our conversations in the home can be scattering Elm Street. It can be scattering the school. It can be scattering the conference. Or it can be gathering Elm Street together. It can be gathering the school together. Or it can be gathering the conference. It can be gathering the family together. The kingdom of this world is trying hard to wear down the spiritual units that are trying to establish the kingdom of heaven on all levels. They're joining hand in hand to be the strongest unit possible to overthrow the church, to get a wedge in somewhere, to tear the fabric somewhere. They're trying hard to do that. Are we trying hard to keep the unit together? I know we are. I'm not preaching this message because I believe Elm Street is falling apart. I really have a lot of appreciation for Elm Street. In fact, it was a question that was put to me that I did a lot of pondering about. Sometimes in family life, we have a little sibling that suddenly starts to cry because a bigger sibling just wrecked his whatever he was building. And usually the parent buys up that moment to do some discipline so the older child learns to respect the activities of the younger child and not be a bully, because it's not a tolerable way to do life. You don't wreck what others are trying to build. You try and find something to play together with and enter into what they're building. But you know, we can so subtly do that with the kingdom of God. You know, this moment is just not the way we thought this is going to pan out. This boat was just not the way we thought it was going to go. And we stand in sideways to some collective effort of some kind, and we just believe we have to somehow get our way in all this, somehow wreck this so that it can be rebuilt and we can do what the way we want to do. As I shared, this message burned in my heart for a couple of reasons. It seems like we are getting softer, and the pursuit of happiness, our personal happiness, is becoming so paramount to what it takes to work together as a group, as a team. I was reminded of this when I was traveling. A relatively young father was talking about his church life, not one of our churches. But I could tell that he was disappointed. He was very disappointed with what he perceived as lethargy of more so the middle age, which trickled down to the young people. And I just listened to him talk a little bit, and seemed like he wanted my advice on whether he should be looking for another church. And I ended up giving him my testimony, because obviously there were standards in his church that he wasn't quite in harmony with. But as I listened to his testimony, or his concerns and his trying to ascertain what life would mean for him, and I listened to Steve's testimony on Wednesday evening, and the far-reaching ripples when the institution of the home falls prey to dysfunction, and the price he paid to try and be a part of a church life that he thought held hope for their family, and his relentless pursuit of that. It got me doing a lot of thinking. What is Elm Street worth to me today? What is it worth to me today? How much am I willing to lay down in my personal agendas to keep fighting for what Elm Street is today? To have young people here sitting on the benches and trying to maintain a church life that was gifted to us so that we can gift it to them. What for fight is that worth for us? What are we willing to be willing to lay down of our personal agendas and our personal goals and our things we wish were different? And we're all going to have things that we don't quite like. We're just going to. We're all going to have things that cost us. From our perspective, this costs us to be a part of the family here at Elm Street. We wish we could be doing it this way. We maybe wish very badly we could be doing it this way. But God somehow orchestrated that this is the way it is being done. Are we going to be a uniter, or are we going to be a scatterer? Are we going to do things that Satan can use to get wedges in, or are we going to work on our hearts and say, you know what? Maybe I need to just plug in, and I just need to put all my heart into this and try and preserve what God has really gifted to me. We are either weakening those around us and taking away their courage to stay in and step up to whatever they're facing in life, or we are showing them how to fight manfully onward against the besetting sins, whatever they are, in our own life, the lethargy, the worldliness, the pleasures that are all around us. But every one of us has this thing that we call influence. Each one of us here this morning is very influential. And sometimes people look to us as church leaders as being the influencers, the movers and the shakers, so to speak. But I want to remind you that we can only do so much. The influence has to go out among all of us. If that young father I talked to would decide to leave his church instead of try and do what he can to shore up and be a light and a beacon there, if he would decide to do that, he would influence with that decision. It would happen automatically. The decisions that we make influence each other one way or another. And we can influence to be a, we can be a scatterer through our influence, or we can be a gatherer. And we can try and shine a light of maybe a better path forward and see if people take notice. We can help or hinder someone from doing what they really should do for the sake of their soul by our level of spiritual strength and spiritual maturity. I heard some testimonies recently of what a term of Bible school did and how much it blessed you. And obviously there's usually new friends made at Bible school. And it can be as simple of a thing if what if one of those new friends you made at Bible school would say, "Let's go again next year." And you say, one term's good enough for me. I'm a one-termer, nothing beyond that. That's not in my radar. What just happened? What just happened? It seems with the world in our pockets, we can hardly get too much of concentrated Bible study and times together. And the Bible says that the closer we get to the end, the more we need to be saturating ourselves, the more we need to be doing things that are countering what this world is pressing in if we want to be winners in the end. It scares me, all the far-out teachings coming across the media with no balancing of exposure from an Anabaptist perspective. It can sound so convincing. We have to keep feeding in and getting information from those we know, or Satan might get a wedge. Well, am I a gatherer or a scatterer? I have just 3 points here. Am I a gatherer or a scatterer as it relates to the principles of Jesus in valuing brotherhood? Do we value our brotherhood here this morning? I was glad that I could give that young man a testimony that I observed here at Elm Street and happened in my own life. I usually tell potential church shoppers, you will not find the perfect church no matter where you go. You won't find the perfect church. My testimony is I found great peace in believing God directs us in life through circumstances and people. I found my way to Elm Street through marriage. And I liked my wife's church. There was something here that I really liked. And as I was just pondering this picture, you know, it was you men here in the front that were middle-aged. I observed you. I observed Brother Sidney and Brother Aaron trying to balance doctrine and trying to balance a practical church life and be a outreach here in this community. And it was inspiring to me. They would preach doctrine, but they were also flexible and trying to minister and trying to reach those around us, but not lose out doctrinally in the process. I was blessed with to observe all that. And Elm Street went through a change of affiliation. It went through some challenging times. And I know that those older than me, not all of them were in agreement with what was happening at all times, but they chose to, by example, show me how to lay down my personal preferences and to keep trying to work together as a unit. And here I am today, blessed with this congregation. And I just want to see this continue for the youth, where we learn how to lay down our pet peeves, so to speak, and we learn how to keep working together as a brotherhood. And as was pointed out in Sunday school, trying to explore the different perspectives and see what for value is there for us, because we look through one perspective most of the time. It says, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. There's safety in that. I don't see very much safety in carving the turkey smaller and smaller, and after a while it's the church house and it's just a couple of families, and you know what? It don't matter how many it is. It takes work to agree together on some of the most unique things. I was sustained by the strong belief that God put people in my life and orchestrated the current events, and what was happening went across his desk, and he has plans and purposes, even though it seems so counter to what I thought should be his plans and purposes at times. I believe gatherings or scatterings has so much to do with how much we value the brother or sister beside us, and believe that God brought them into our life for a reason, and believe that they can speak into our heart, into our life. When we resist God's working in our life, we become scatterers very quickly. Our attitudes show, and people see it, and in home life, our children see it. And I don't want to imply that I don't believe that there is any good and logical reason to change church affiliation from one to another that is solidly grounded in Jesus Christ and practical applications. I don't want to imply I believe that. But I do want to, my burden this morning is that we don't become a people that just looks out around at every pet and whim and wish that whatever it doesn't seem like is quite fitting into what our personal preference would be. Let's be very careful with that. Because if we're not careful, we become a scatterer and we end up defeating Satan's kingdom in something that could have been a very united cause. Number two, we gather or scatter proportionally to the value we place on what we have. If we value what we have, we're willing to pay a big price to defend it. And if we don't value what we have, then we'll scatter. A strong man, says, will guard his possessions. He doesn't want someone else to have the loot. Brother and sister, we don't want Satan to have what God has gifted us so graciously all these years, do we? If I, as a young person, do not value my Christian home and see God at work in my life through my parents, I will set myself up for a lot of conflict. Dad and Mom will get to the place that they can hardly do anything right. It's the way it goes. If I do not value my church life, even though it's not perfect, as a good place to raise my family, I set myself up to a lot of agonizing decisions. Church leaders will hardly be able to do anything right. The problem is we don't value what God has gifted us, and our anger comes out on people. The spiritual victory that Steve shared on Wednesday evening, in spite of the many things crumbling around him, only happened because he saw value. He saw value in the Anabaptist lifestyle. He did not believe that Anabaptism was exclusive, but he believed that it was a good way to express our faith in God practically. Do we see that same value? Or do we feel blessed with what God has shown us? I think back, and I appreciated, as I stated, the balance of doctrinal teaching and trying to keep the church practically in line with what God's will would be. And I remember Aaron Shank talk about the pressures of his day when the women would swirl their hair around like a beehive on top of their head, and they put a small lacy something on the top, and they call it a covering. It was their sign to the angels. And I remember Brother Aaron saying that arranged hair for display is not, with something on top, is not a biblical design, a biblical sign. He said the biblical sign is the covered hair. And that was a very foundational principle that I value yet to this day. It's not a little piece of lace or something on top of a worldly hair display, but it's a covered head that is a sign that is what the church needs to be and wants to be. And I'm just so glad for the practice that we have as sisters. I appreciate what you're doing, but don't be ashamed to have your covering positioned in a way that is visible from the front as well as the sides. Young men, I had a father ask me a question, a young father, also from another church setting. He asked me this. He said, "How are the youth at Elm Street?" And he was talking in particular about the youth boys. I wasn't sure what he was after, but he meant in regards to Christian maturity. In his church, the boys are into the muscle trucks, the tricked out, wheeled up, and chipped. He said, "How are your youth doing? What's it like at your church?" How should I have answered him? You know, how are we doing? How are we doing with the goals of our congregational life as it relates to the things of this world? Does the world observe maturity? Does the world... What if the news reporter that was at Hidden River, what if they would step up to you and ask you questions about why you're here and what your faith is? I saw him walk up to some girls this age and he showed his badge and he started asking them questions. There are so many ways that we can do harm to God's kingdom if we're not careful with our lifestyles. I had a couple different people show me some houses. Again, it was more younger families show me some houses that their friends are upgrading to. And I commented to one of them. I said, "It appears that the pressure is on for housing to be more upscale in the Mennonite community." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "It makes you feel sort of inferior to buy a conventional house." What do we value? Are we gathering or scattering in regards to kingdom values in the things we bring in to allow into our personal life? I was reading in the stewardship connections that Brother Wayne talked about in Sunday school, and the title caught my attention, "Surviving Prosperity as a Church." You know, the challenge is just on. I face it to upscale our personal lifestyle. In so many ways, it's there. It's the world we live in. And when the middle age upscales, the pressures come on the younger generation to splurge. Maybe they don't have the resources saved up to do it, and they get themselves tangled in a debt trail right out of the gate that is hard to overcome because it's borrowed money. Let's work together. Let's work together at not being a scatterer, but to being a uniter in the values that should be a part of Christian experience. Lastly, number three, a biblical church life is not stagnant. There will be cultural shifts. There will be changes in how things are done and what is okay and what is not okay and what we can say can be part of the church and what we say should be part of the world. And we will never all see it exactly the same. We just never will. But if we're going to work together as a unit, if we're going to have a church to share with the next generation, to enjoy and have a safe haven, we're going to have to lay down some of our preferences to make it work. The bigger danger I see in our attempts at togetherness in practice in Anabaptism is, as it appears to me, the church is running out of patience. It's running out of patience to move together. We live in such a fast-acting life cycle. It just amazes me at how fast government moves and the decisions that a president has to make in a day's time. And I saw another article that caught my attention in that magazine. It says the influential Anabaptist businessman. Is it possible that a person who has kingdom resources from a well-managed business could become a scatter in the church instead of a gather because of the pressures that are born into the life of a business person? It's stated that one of the pearls of business people in church life is that they're expected to make quick decisions in business life. They have to stay nimble. They have many people asking them many things in a day's time. And they have to stay on their toes and give direction. But when it comes to church life, they forget that they need to turn that switch off. And now we're a body of believers and we need to take time to figure this out together. Or maybe the business person is quick to take cost out of the factor. There's this decision that needs to be made and suddenly the money's available and it ends up influencing the decision by money being thrown in that maybe was not wise to do. Maybe the church should have taken the time to sort it out first of all. Is this something we want to do? And then check and see if the resources would be there. Well, there's many ways we could go. Are we a gatherer or a scatterer? The bottom line is, in all this, is Jesus said that the forces of the kingdom of darkness work as a unit to protect their interest. May we as the people of light feel equally indebted to work together as a unit to hold forth the kingdom of light. Not unwilling to sacrifice our preferences if it appears to be in the interest of cohesion of the larger body. We're not unwilling to do that. If it was up to us, we would have done it differently, but it's okay. We see it as imperative that we stay together. The success of the kingdom of God is finally in each person, each one personally allowing our life to be directed by the people God places around us and endeavoring to work with harmony toward the same goal after we hear each other's hearts. The safety of the stuff in a palace is realized by valuing the stuff, then putting our energy on the line to protect what we value, following the orders of our commander-in-chief, Jesus Christ, utilizing the internal strength of cohesion to fight off the enemy as it endeavors to attack us. The keeping of a palace is when every occupant is united in gathering and not scattering. May that be each one of our goals. May we have the courage to do that at the times it gets tough, so that we can continue to be a unit here at Elm Street that is giving Satan's kingdom a hard time because Jesus has united us. Shall we kneel for prayer?